Are you still friends with Facebook? Facebook users across the country are trying to decide whether to stick with the social media staple or delete their accounts to protect their privacy after Cambridge Analytica's abuse of information was revealed. Meanwhile, smart devices have entered our homes, helping us with daily tasks and playing music on command, but also adding another potential security risk. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we'll discuss the latest tech news, including privacy issues and new smart devices, and learn about how the newest gadgets make your life easier. And our tech experts will, of course, take your questions about laptops, smartphones, and tablets, or whatever device might be causing you trouble. The pros and cons of technology in our lives. Main Calling is next. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. It's one of the big questions of our time. Is technology helpful or harmful? The Facebook privacy fallout is one case in point. So are all the new smart devices on the market. So today we'll talk with our tech experts about the pros and cons that technology offers. And as always, they'll answer your tech-related questions. Joining me in our studio, Janet McKenney. She's Director of Library Development at the Maine State Library. Andrew Rosenstein is the owner of TechPort. And Jared Maxfield owns Necessary Technology. As always, we want to hear from you. How important is technology to you? Have you jumped on the smart speaker bandwagon, or does it creep you out to think of a device that's in your home always listening? The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome, everybody, back to Maine Calling. So, as we all know by now, the Cambridge Analytica story has really launched a national conversation about access to personal data, in this case involving some 50 million Facebook users. Facebook founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg responded this week for the first time, saying that, well, yes, we have a responsibility to protect your data, but that hasn't really stopped the intensity of this national debate. I just want to go around as personal users of Facebook. What's your take? And we'll start with here.
I mean, as a personal user, it's concerning. But honestly, because of the work we're in, I'm not surprised. We talk about your data being compromised, quote unquote, but in reality, this is what Facebook and these companies are built to do. They were built for information generation so that they can then use that information to create revenue and to create profits. Advertising that we see, for example, in our Facebook feed, when you see a ad for a product come up is one way, the traditional way that they earn their revenue. But all the information about what we do, what we click on, what we like, you know, the profiles that are built is why these companies, not just Facebook, were created. So it's not ideal, but it is part of the world we live in. And I run by the philosophy, and that's what I always tell my customers. If you're plugged into the internet, assume it's out there. You know, whatever's on your computer, just make that assumption, because unfortunately that's the world we live in. But a lot of these things that you're talking about now aren't necessarily – these aren't hacks. This isn't criminal organizations. This is business as usual and how it was set up to be done. So
yeah, and it's because people don't really know who they're handing this stuff to, these third-party apps, et cetera.
Well, we all see how long the terms and conditions are and how small the print is, who actually reads it. And buried in there is, you know, with these advertising-type things, essentially – unlike Trojans or viruses, things that attack your computer and trying to maliciously steal your information, these are the types of things that honestly every single one of us actually clicked the button and we technically essentially signed a contract and opted into. So the world of 1984 where we're being spied on is not the world we developed. We actually developed a world where we willingly hand our information out to anybody and everybody pretty much. So it's concerning.
Yeah. Janet?
Yeah, I think it's a wake-up call. You know, we're all aware of security and security risks, but, you know, as you use Facebook, you get lured into, you know, the personality quizzes, you know, what are you doing? What are you like? What's your state like? And I think what's happened now raises the level of awareness that this isn't just something fun to do, but there are people behind those quizzes and polls and all that that are looking to data mine your information. And so I think it's a good opportunity for people to look at, you know, who gets my information? Is it friends or friends of friends? And, you know, how does that build up? And do you go in and check your settings and make sure that all these apps that, you know, maybe you did take that quiz, but, you know, go in and delete that app so that it's, you know, no longer linked to your Facebook account.
Yeah, Andrew.
Well, the most interesting thing that I've gone through as a family in the last week or so is working with my daughters to help them understand. And, you know, they're young women. They're really smart about technology and hardware. And, I mean, they can do some of the same repairs that I can do sometimes. But they don't understand the software implications. And this has been a real learning opportunity for them to teach them that their personal information is not really personal.
So any of you considering unfriending Facebook entirely?
I'm not, to be honest, because, again, you work under the assumption that it's out there. As Janet also mentioned, and you should go through, and there are ways to personalize what data you will or will not share.
So that's just a trip into you get into settings
But it also comes down to your behavior. Like you were mentioning these apps. So as a practical matter, what are we talking about? Whether you've done it or you've seen it in your feed, you know, what would your face look like if you were a panda? which beetle would you be? Take our quiz. And what you'll notice about a lot of these quizzes or fun little things, you know, they're not set up because someone just wanted to amuse themselves. There's a reason behind that. And they're harvesting information that they can then turn into revenue. And a lot of times, one of the telltale signs, one of the things that I will virtually never do is in the small times I've maybe taken one of these quizzes online, like answer these 21 questions about history. All right, they got me on something like that. But you get to the end, and in order to get your results, you have to actually like opt into their app. You know, you have to hit allow. What is behind that allow button? What am I allowing? And what you're allowing is you're allowing the free flow of your information, not just the results of your 21 questions you just filled out, but you're allowing information that is part of your Facebook profile to now go to these third-party companies. And the problem with the Cambridge Analytica issue is essentially all these companies have signed an agreement that says we're just going to use this data that we get for this particular purpose. We're not going to sell or use this data for outside third-party options. For example, using it as data for elections and how to reach people and trigger people and get to them. But the problem with the Facebooks of the world is they create these contracts and these companies will sign them, but there's no data police really out there monitoring to make sure that, hey, so it's almost part of the deal and it's unsaid, but when your information's being handed out there, to think that these third-party companies are just using it in these very rigid, minimal ways is a little naive.
And this, there's what Facebook calls its platform. Is this the thing that allows these apps to get access to you? And you can just turn that off, right? So these quizzes don't show up in your feed.
You can, but the turn-off features are buried very deep. Because this gets at the heart of Facebook's revenue. So more concerning as well is every time you sign in using your Facebook ID, you're giving permission for a third party to take a look at what's going on. And while it was perfectly legitimate, that Cambridge Analytica took this data, they violated their contract with Facebook. And I think that's even more concerning that what they did wasn't out of bounds, but what they did with the information was the problem.
Yeah.
I agree with Andrew, and part of it is our own, you know, discipline that we have to bring to Facebook, you know, as this really raises awareness, you know, it's time to say, what do I really want to be on Facebook for? You know, for me, it's more family and communication and pictures and, you know, the quizzes and that type of stuff. Yeah, it's kind of fun, but I don't really need that. So I'm going kind of cold turkey on that right now and just, you know, see what happens.
So there was an app recently where you match your face to a famous painting.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
That's what you're talking about.
I did not do it. I have a lot of friends that did it, but I did. Yes. That's the exact type of thing.
It's so easy to be sucked in by it, you know, because, you know, and obviously they're doing that purposefully, you know. They don't care, you know.
What famous person in history do you look like? Andrew just mentioned a good one, which is sign in with Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you go to a random third-party site and also very legitimate top-tier sites, you can go and, okay, I have to create an account and enter in all my information, a name, an address, an email, and enter the password in twice and go through all that. Or I could sign in with Facebook. Oh, I just put in my Facebook username and password, and it creates an account. Well, by doing that, you had some convenience, but what you traded off for that convenience is long-term data transfer to whatever organization or company you just signed up with.
Yeah.
So keep in mind as you go through the, you know, these things aren't being done out of the kindness of the giant corporation's heart. There's a methodology behind that, and it's getting your data.
Right, and also you notice that the sign in with Facebook option is often much larger and colorful than the create an account option, which is often in smaller typeset, and so they want you to give up that information.
Sign in with Facebook or enter your email. You know, it's just
right. How much of then does this conversation transfer to smart devices? People have, while it's becoming incredibly popular, and more of these are in homes. Some people are creeped out, as we said at the top, by this ear listening, and not just the creep factor, but also a really practical concern about where the information about your how you live your daily life, when you come and go, your bank accounts might all find their way into this ear, and we don't know where it's going. Is that a real issue for you, Jared, as well?
Sure.
Or is it the same?
You're right.
Is it the same answer that
you're right. But when you talk about your smart devices, you know, my personal decision is I traded that creepiness factor for the convenience of turning my lights on and off by just speaking out loud. So for everyone, it's a personal decision. So nobody's forcing you to go. What's funny with you mentioned smartphones is a lot of times people think about the smart speakers now, the HomePod and Alexa and things like this that are constantly always in listening mode for your command. And they go, I'm never going to do that. But a lot of folks forget they've got an iPhone in their pocket that has Hey Siri activated. And the reason that that works is because she's also listening as well. And that one you're walking around with 24/7. So this is all technology and a process that we have opted into, and what you're trading, in my opinion, is like most things with technology, convenience and efficiency and things like that. But it's not for free. It's not just what you paid to buy your Amazon device. It's also your long term. That being said, Amazon claims that they're not listening and harvesting your information, but we'll probably have a show about that in a couple of years.
Yeah, is your smart TV listening to you too as well? So,
right. So are there things that we just shouldn't talk about in front of these devices? Or
I actually talk to them. You know, hey, if anybody's listening out there, I have something to say. You know, but that's how I deal with it.
We all need like a little Faraday cage to put over them when we're having a private conversation. No electromagnetic energy in or out. But it is kind of creepy, of course, but these devices all have microphone mute settings as well. You can, for instance, you can go into HomePod and change some of the settings and shut off Siri for a bit of time. I mean, the Siri that lives on HomePod is sort of a bit of a less intelligent Siri than the one that's on the phone right now. So, and Apple has made efforts to, if they do gather any data, it's not identifiable to any particular user. So it may be just a conglomerate of, you know, people in the Northeast prefer this type of music.
The HomePod, speaking of which, this is really about the speaker. Is that the sell here as much as it is these other functions? Because it's a bit pricier.
Yes, it costs more, but the sound is pretty phenomenal. And you can get two. And eventually with AirPlay 2, the second generation of AirPlay, you'll be able to use two speakers as stereo speakers as well. It's not true stereo, but but you can also have multiples of Google Home, of Amazon speakers as well. And it is really the sound quality that's
pretty. How does it compare price-wise?
The HomePod is $349, and I believe the Google products are about $100 less. You can also buy two of the Sonos units for about the same price. Right now they've been having a special that I believe runs out soon, but Sonos also offers amazing sound quality as well.
And what do you two guys use?
Well, I have the little Echo Dot, and she's been really quiet because I did some stuff with my phone and the app isn't active right now, so she's not active. But we shut off notifications and, you know, she was pretty chatty for a while. But one of the things that was really interesting to do was to go into the app because there's actually kind of a log of all the conversations, because I remember something weird came up and I went into the log and looked, you know, because, you know, she said something really strange that didn't relate to anything that was going on. So the log's really interesting. You know, again, you want to be informed about what your technology is doing, and you just can't be passive today about it.
Yeah. Jared, what do you have at home?
I've got the
he has everything.
The Alexa Echo products, and have added more and more because they are kind of addictive. And again, we use them for convenience. Just ask random questions, set timers. I think of, you know, my daughter's almost four, and I think they're now calling them Generation Alpha, which are the new generation of kids who are growing up exclusively in this connected world. They literally have no. And it's funny to have an almost four-year-old who talks to Alexa, but will ask questions or play songs. We were at a friend's house the other day, and I told one of the kids basically, okay, I can do what you're asking, but give me 5 minutes. And she literally walked into the kitchen and said, Alexa, set a timer for 5 minutes. And she's like 6 years old. So it's all convenience. And like Andrew said, though, especially with younger kids and parents, it's almost a new conversation to have about, you know, they call it your digital footprint. What do you leave? What do you sign up for? And that's definitely important for people to be involved with, because we're handing out a lot of information, and that upcoming group of kids is a big revenue source.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions for the tech team. The number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Camp Ousing, a Maine summer camp for kids with high-functioning autism and other social challenges. CampOusing.com.
Tomorrow is March for Our Lives, a national day of action inspired by students who demand we make their safety a priority in this age of mass school shootings. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC. Join me and public radio reporters across the country for live special coverage as teenagers and their supporters take to America's streets to protest. Tune in, and if you're marching, call in.
And you can hear that special beginning tomorrow at noon. This week on The Maine Event, Sunday evening at 6 on Maine Public Television, join former Democratic Speaker of the Maine House Hannah Pingree and Republican State Senator Roger Cates to talk about Maine's unemployment system and specifically the crashing of the new website. The Maine Event, Sunday evening at 6 on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, what's happening in the world of technology? Joining me today, Andrew Rosenstein, owner of Techport, Jared Maxfield, owner of Necessary Technology, and Janet McKenney, director of library development at the Maine State Library. We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Speaking of Facebook, I guess what is with this new scrutiny, Facebook under this new scrutiny, Jared, there's been some movement to Instagram, good fortune for that platform.
It is good fortune for that platform, but that platform is owned by Facebook. So what's kind of ironic is, I mean, A, over the last year or two, you've seen this migration going to Instagram. You know, people find Instagram a little it's funny, almost Facebook is almost becoming like, for us, the old people, and Instagram's for the young folks. It's more image-based, softer, not as much of the, you know, especially with the political back and forth and all right. that. But that being said, as people say, well, I'm leaving Facebook and going to Instagram, you're literally in the same boat because they're owned by the same companies and some of the same principles we've been talking about apply there.
Is it a similar business model that is mining and selling
ads
data?
And ads and data. I mean, these are they're ad companies. You know, this is what Google and out of everything they're doing, the end of the, I mean, literally everything we do in this world is, you know, every TV show you watch at the end of the day is designed to sell shampoo. So everything is based on advertising and media, and this is just the new way of doing it.
And Andrew, during the break, you made a point that even if you decided to jettison Facebook, it's not easy to do. It's you could delete the account, but it doesn't always end there.
Well, you can do something called deactivate your account, which is basically putting it into deep hibernation. And you have to dig deeper in the settings to actually delete it, and it's not easy because, remember, other websites and other apps are entangled with your Facebook ID. And in a sense, I don't really think that's the solution. I think that using Facebook smarter is the real solution. And we're at this point now that we've gone past the wow factor, essentially. Technology can do what? That's amazing. And we're into this wait a second factor. That's sort of part two of our awareness about how technology is changing our lives. And now I think we're in a position where we can say, wait a second. I don't want to give all my personal information up, and I've got to be careful. So it's better in many ways.
Let's go to Bob in Scarborough. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Bob, I'm sorry. I know you have a question about smartphones, but yours is not working right now. Give us a try back when you have a better signal, and we'll see if we can get you on. He's gone. I was going to read his opinion. Speaking of smartphones, though, Andrew, I wanted to ask you about a couple of things. One is, or I could ask the whole panel, this 500 gig phone that's coming up, more than 500. Why would we need a phone like that? I mean, I guess I was reading that you could, you know, take video all day long, for example, on it. But is it just sort of like something to show off about, or might it have real application?
I think it does have real application because video is memory intensive. And I mean, I have a phone, I'm embarrassed to say, with very little memory.
And I
just thought, you know, I'm just going to go for the easy solution. But the fact is that I do run out of room for photos and videos. And let's say you're taking a trip and you just want to take videos of your trip, you'll fill that up, you know, in a week's time. So it's a good thing.
Hmm. Let's try Paige in South Berwick. Hi, Paige. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good, thanks.
Good, good. So I just wanted to share, I was down in Florida a couple of weeks ago, and I went to one of the grocery stores, a Publix, and I bought a product and, you know, wasn't on my phone or anything like that. And within maybe an hour or so of returning to the house, an ad for that exact product at that exact store showed up on my Facebook news feed.
So an hour is how long that took to happen.
Surprised it took that long.
Yeah.
It's instant. I mean, you'll notice a good example of how these ad things, trackers work, is you might notice, for example, you're looking at a product on Amazon on Monday. And then you don't buy it. You're just browsing. You're looking at different things. And you might notice a couple days later you're on another random website, and all of a sudden there's a banner ad on the side of it for the exact product you were looking at. It's because you are being tracked by so many ad trackers and so many different companies. And this is how these networks are designed now. So what you do once comes back over and over.
And you can turn that off. You can turn off ad tracking. You can turn off the microphone for Facebook. You can go into your settings and you can spend a half hour and go through and protect yourself.
And some people, I'm guessing, some consumers like this, right? If they're searching for something, they like being courted, having options come to them.
Right. Some stores have enabled connect with your phone using near field communication with very short bandwidth of communication with your phone to provide instant coupons. So you're standing in aisle 12, you're looking at shampoo, and sure enough, on your phone, hey, you got 10% off something.
You might get a deal, but flip side of that is there's also, for the last few years, there's geo-targeting. You can also get the flip side of that, which is not save money, but potentially save more. For example, if you're looking for an airline ticket and you're in a more affluent tax base area based on your zip code and your IP address and where you track back to, you might actually get dynamically charged a little bit more than somebody looking for that exact same thing who's in another zip code that doesn't meet those same parameters. So while you could potentially also have some savings, you could also potentially be in a bucket just because you're being tracked to literally geographically where you are. In fact, even sometimes paying more for something.
And they know if you're using a $2,500 MacBook Pro or a $500 Acer.
Wow. Okay, let's go to Bill.
They're out there.
Bill is in Whiting. Hi, Bill. Welcome to Maine Calling. You're on the air.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. Good show. Very timely. I talked to the producer, and I don't know if this is a little out of the scope of your show, but one of the irritants that I have with information sharing is that I'm finding that the state of Maine, more than any, is one of the bigger purveyors of our information, and I don't think there is anywhere one of those terms and conditions that you scroll through. It's Department of Motor Vehicles. It's the commerce side of things. I just recently changed my small business to an LLC, and I only did that with the Secretary of State, and within days I started getting all kinds of offers for insurance and POS systems and all kinds of things for this newfound business that nobody else was aware of but the state of Maine. I'm getting for my vehicles, you know, recalls on my Facebook page, on my Amazon and Gmail, for the Takata airbag recalls and those kinds of things. And, you know, I don't think anybody out there is aware, you know, that I have that vehicle registered to me with that VIN number, but it shows up. It's really insidious and pernicious. And as I said, you know, and you mentioned earlier, in all fairness, we all, you know, scroll through that terms and conditions sheet just to get into the app, but I don't know if there is one of those, and I'd be also kind of curious to know where selling personal information shows up in a budget for the state of Maine on the revenue side. And so with that, I'll just kind of let it go. But there's an overlap, and these things are more and more integrated now, and even those, you know, old static information exchanges, for example, with the state of Maine and that, have found their way into the digital platforms that you guys are talking about. So I'll let you go. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm curious to hear your insight.
All right. Thank you, Bill. I guess Bill's point is, I guess everybody is
right.
In the business.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you go online these days, you know, apply for car insurance in 60 seconds and things like that. I don't know exactly how the state of Maine works, but in general, you know, there are these things called APIs, basically access into information databases. And even the government gives certain access out to third-party companies. That's how people know these things. But some of it, and then also a lot of it gets then added to the database, added to your footprint, and propagated out. But things like your VIN number, address, I mean, it's all out there. If you register an LLC with the state, you can go into the state, into the corporation's version of the, you know, that's all public information. Once it hits the internet, even if the state's not directly giving it out, there can also be companies out there that have set up essentially mining operations to come in, constantly update this information. But a lot of that stuff he mentions is public, and some of it they do give access to literally companies and corporations for hopefully good reasons, but you never know.
And, you know, some of that data even years and years ago, you were able to purchase like the motor vehicle registrations of a certain state. But now in our world of the internet and electronics, it can be used in so many different ways that the consequences seem far greater, even though it existed, you know, 20 years ago.
And what you were purchasing then was like a big stack of addresses.
Right, exactly. Yeah, labels.
Just, yeah, you know. Right, okay. Let's go to Valerie in Raymond. Hi, Valerie.
Hi there.
Hi. You're on the air.
Hi. So I was listening to your program, and I'm a consider myself a young person. I work in the hospitality industry in Portland, and I am the only person that I know who does not use Facebook. I have not been on Facebook for over a year. I don't use any of the social media forms. I guess my husband and I would consider ourselves the last analog people that we know. And I would encourage more people to become a part of this. It's been done for generations and generations of people not needing this advanced technology. And I understand that technology can be a wonderful thing and a benefit to many societies, and it can do a lot of great things, but it's not needed for everybody in everyone's life. You don't have to have it. And although I would say it's been a tough road for some of my family and friends to get on board, they are. They're there. It's taken some people about a year now to get used to it, but I'm just not plugged in. I'm not on the grid.
Is this for philosophical reasons having to do with some of what we've already talked about around privacy, commercialism? What's the reason for that?
It's a combination of things. I think it started with privacy issues. I just felt like in order for me to sign up for, say, an app on my phone or something, and I needed to just quick sign up with Facebook, it felt like there was a hidden agenda, or maybe that it just was too easy to have everything connected. It also started when I began seeing advertisements on Facebook for things that I had never told anyone about, and I didn't think that there was any way for... I know I sound like a conspiracy theory person, but it just started to kind of scare me a little bit. Mm. And we just decided that it wasn't something we needed in our household anymore. So now we don't use it.
All right, Valerie. Well, thanks for sharing. 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Any comments on...
She's right. Yeah. It's commendable. It's tougher in this world to disconnect, but there's got to be a nice liberating feeling to it. But she mentioned a point that we've mentioned here before, and it's kind of creepy, but I've said we tell Google more than we tell our family members or our doctors, you know? I mean, it's true. And to know that information, something I'd never told anyone, and then all of a sudden I get a banner ad for it on a random site, Google knows more than almost anybody. I mean, literally the closest people to us.
Yeah,
you don't tell everything but Google.
That is creepy. Let's go to Bob, who is a... giving us a second try on his phone. He's calling from Scarborough. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call again. That was a bit ironic, wasn't it?
Yes. much better now.
You know, I just want to say I'm online a lot, but, put me down as a proud non-Facebook user. As adults, if you're engaged at all, there's a quid pro quo going on here. None of these platforms are there, out of the kindness of their hearts. They're there to make money, and it's a commercial enterprise, and they're going to do what's best for them. But my real concern is, and not to overplay it, but what it's doing to the teenagers. I have a teenager in high school, and today the kid who is not addicted to their phone is the exception and not the rule. And they're turning into Pavlov's dogs. I mean, I look at my daughter. And she'll sit there and she'll unconsciously flip her phone up and look at it over and over again to see if she's got a text or anything. And it's just pure habit. And it's like, they have no ability to focus now. I mean, they're just reactive. And, I think those rare times when, I shut the radio off, turn off the TV and just listen to myself and think, and you get that clarity of thought when there's no intrusions. And you can make your life plans, and you just see things clearer. And these kids, they just don't have the intellect and the maturity to shut them off and walk away from them. It's the 24/7 social media, and I mean, I think it's doing serious damage. And I'm just going to hang up.
Thank you, Bob. Now I'm no kid, and I still have a reaction when I get the little ding, from a Facebook message or a text or something. There's something when you when you're anticipating it and you get it. Maybe it's just like there's something on the other side that you desperately have to see who it is and what they want. But it is very it's like a drug. Yeah,
it's become. They've done studies, and there have been people from Facebook recently in the last few months. There are articles out who helped design and set it up and then came out, and now they've said, I'm kind of sorry for what I did because what it's doing to society. And that gentleman's right when you talk about Pavlov's dog, because it's that ding, that's your cube of sugar. That's the reward that people are looking for, and some people literally become addicted to it. And by the way, it was designed to be that way.
All right, we'll take another quick break. When we come back, we want to hear from you. The number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
President Trump gave a speech in New Hampshire highlighting New England's opioid crisis. On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll look at an often overlooked community that's being affected by this crisis. First responders and those working in the recovery field.
If I can come in and maybe talk to one person and have them leave here with a smile, then I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
The challenge of compassion fatigue on Next. Please join us.
Join us for Next at 2 o'clock.
On the next Planet Money, we take a weird detour into the new business model for the Guinness Book of World Records.
I went for the record and did 27,000.
You did 27,000 jumping jacks?
Yeah.
And on How I Built This, we meet the guys who created the photo sharing app Instagram.
There's no reason we should have succeeded. We had so many chances to fail, but we just kept at it.
I'm Robert Smith.
And I'm Guy Raz.
Join us for the next Planet Money.
Followed by How I Built This from NPR.
And you can join us for that tomorrow morning at 11 a.m.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the latest from the world of technology. Joining me, Jared Maxfield with Necessary Technology, Janet McKenney with the Maine State Library, and Andrew Rosenstein of Techport. Do you have a tech question? Give us a call. The number, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Robert in Belfast. Hi, Robert.
Hi, nice program, and appreciate what your people are saying. I'm on an Android non-smartphone, and I'm not a Facebook user, and I'm happy to be both. Valerie and Bob sort of took the wind out of my sail, and you're talking a little bit about the addictive aspect of what we're seeing with all of this technology. And I just want to say that I think there really is an addictive component to what's going on. I mean, it's not rocket science. Look at the kids who can't get away from their phone, and look at some adults on Facebook where they put photos of the dinner on the table and paint drying on the wall, and that sort of stuff. And I just want to say that I think it's a real addictive phenomena in many ways, and it's being used as many addictive substances are being used by the people that push the addictions. And I'll go off the phone now and let other people talk about what you're saying, but I think addiction is a big part of it.
Yeah. All right, Robert, thank you very much.
They did a study a couple of years ago where they surveyed young teenage girls, I believe, around 13, 14. Basically, what it came out with was the question was, would you rather be, if you were grounded, do people still stay grounded? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Are you still allowed to do that? But if you were grounded, would you rather be grounded in a way where you can leave your home and actually see your friends but have no device? Or you are grounded to the house where you cannot see your friends but you would still have your device? And overwhelmingly, they'd rather be locked in a room with their device than actually out and about with other fellow human beings.
That says a lot. Here's a practical question. I did want to get some practical stuff here because I have the same question. It's Robin writes, I'm wary of storing all my passwords in one place, and I don't know if I trust these services that help you store all of your passwords. I just write them down. Is there a service or company that is okay to use for password management? I'm always afraid that I'm going to lose the password to that, and then I won't be able to get any of them. But
Well, I mean, that's the risk that you take. Again, there are two, you know, leading companies. One of them is 1Password. One is LastPass. They do make extraordinary efforts to keep that data safe. But as we know, it's not always safe. The best defense is changing your passwords frequently. If you especially if you use a password service, assume that maybe at some point there may be a breach. It's very unlikely with many of these. They are at the forefront of privacy. But I think that, you know, we have smart devices. We, you know, getting back to the addiction to our phones, we do tend to accumulate a lot of passwords. But having smartphones, having smart speakers means we have to be smart users as well. We're not helpless. This is not a it feels like crack for your brain, but it's one stop short of that.
But we don't have to walk around with a notebook sheet filled with little passwords and scribbles on it. No.
But, you know, one of the things that I really think you should do, along with your will, wherever you keep that strong box, you really need to have your passwords available for people that may have to deal with your affairs once you pass away. Because, access to your bills, you know, talking about deleting people from Facebook. Yeah. There are people on Facebook that have been dead for years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go to Mike in Portland. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I was a little more specific with my metaphor for this. It seems like on a societal level, this is very much like methamphetamine. At first, you're very high functioning, but there's a price to be paid down the line. To me, this feels like something on a societal level that could very well be a real existential crisis. This is like children with hand grenades. There's just way too much potential here. And, you know, we can't handle it, I don't think. I mean, I sound like Cassandra, but that's kind of the way this old Luddite is feeling.
All right, Mike. Mike, thanks
well,
very much.
It really has to come down to being engaged with your kids. They're learning from you and, standing around all day with your nose in your phone instead of communicating with your family is going to lead to those kinds of issues. I mean, I struggle my own family with my kids. They love their phones because it's a connection. But, there are limitations and they understand. We talk about them a lot. And I think having that conversation can be very helpful. It's not the ultimate solution, but I think the isolation of you and your phone is sort of self-propelling in a way. And we need to get kids out of that isolation and engage with them.
All right, let's go to Jimmy in Orono. Hi, Jimmy.
Good afternoon. Great show. It really could be you could have this show on for the rest of the afternoon and probably not take all the questions and comments. I'm a Luddite, too. I have two related questions. Just this morning, the Microsoft tech support message popped up on the screen, the fake one with the audible warning and alarm telling me I have to call Microsoft to reset my computer. And it's not easy to get out of that. It actually commandeers the screen. And I wonder, has somebody infiltrated our computer to some level in order to do that? This happens once every 3 or 4 months, I guess. And then related to that, the HTTPS and the lock symbol that we so rely upon to keep us safe, could that be falsified? Could you be relying on that and yet it be something that is not genuine, not bona fide? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In terms of this first question, the fake pop-up, we're all going to die, call the 800 number, your computer's infected. We call that scareware. It's glorified adware marketing materials used by usually bad guys trying to trick you to basically call the number, log into your machine, do a big dog and pony show and show you all these things that are quote-unquote broken on your machine. Lo and behold, lucky for you, they're on the phone, and for only $199 or $299, they'll fix your computer. So, A, when people see those things, those are a scam. B, they do make them very hard to close, especially on Windows machines. You're going to want to hit, a lot of times people are familiar with Control-Alt-Delete and open up your task manager. And basically what you have to do is force close that browser and then reboot your machine. And then the third thing is, and he's completely right, that could come from a website. They may have typoed a website. Sometimes, you know, just like you go to Zappos and you get a pop-up for shoes, it could literally just be a pop-up from a website and there's nothing on your machine. But if you see it on the regular, it would be good to have your machine checked out because there could be something installed on the machine that is creating that no matter where you are. If you're not online and just on your regular desktop, you see these type of pop-ups, that would be a good indication there's something actually installed on your machine. And on our end, I'll say in the last half year, I feel like we've seen less kind of Trojans and viruses because people are getting better with antivirus solutions. But we've seen a lot more adware, aggressive marketing, advertising stuff, these cookies and trackers that end up on the machine. And again, these are the things that we're talking about, but these are the things that we actually tend to opt into ourselves. So careful what you click on.
A couple of minutes left. We'll go to an actual young person. Emma is calling from Portland. Hi, Emma. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm a professional young person here. So I think some of the arguments that or points that have been made about young folks being addicted to phones, that's a rather simple argument, and I encourage people not to say that it's just a young person problem. You know, we have been using smartphones for a lot longer than our parents have. Seeing my parents transition from a flip phone to a smartphone has only heightened, you know, my own awareness of the addictive element of
phones. I'm sorry, Emma, but you're, again, we had a phone issue quality there, and I couldn't quite.
But she said it's an everybody problem, not just young people.
Okay. It's true.
We're all addicted.
Yeah. But you need to mute your phone occasionally and just say, hey, I'm
disconnecting.
Off. you really do. I mean, for all of us.
And I think looking at it historically, too, you know, there was a lot when other technologies were introduced, when television was introduced, when phones were introduced. It's a historical thing of how a society and a generation adapts to new technologies. And there's always this fear and there is always this adaptation and learning that has to happen. So, you know.
There was a time back in the day when some parent yelled at some kid to stop listening to the radio and get outside and play.
That rock and roll.
You know, when we were your age, we didn't have a radio. So it does.
Hey, TV dinners. Where would we, you know, there was a time when people thought it was insane to sit in front of the TV and eat.
Part of the more the things change, the more they say the same. So it's maybe more pervasive now, though.
I did promise my son one gaming question in this entire thing, and that was, is the gaming console of the future not a console at all?
Very possible. I mean, especially with the new 3D stuff coming out and the VR stuff. I mean, everything, like you were talking about earlier, the 500-gig phone, everything's getting literally smaller. Sizes of storage are getting bigger. Things are getting faster. So, yeah, I would say that's very possible in my opinion.
I'd read that Xbox is planning for a console-free future, so I was just curious. There, question asked. And with that, we're actually out of time. A very quick hour and really interesting. Thank you all once again for enlightening us. Janet McKenney, Director of Library Development at the Maine State Library. Andrew Rosenstein is the owner of Techport, and Jared Maxfield, the owner of Necessary Technology. John Keimel ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 7 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.